This is tape number one of four tapes of the 1992 National Radio Club Convention. We start this series of tapes at the dinner when Ernie Wesolowski stepped up to the microphone.
I want to welcome all of you to Omaha, Nebraska, the Big O team. I'm happy to have you here tonight. And we know that 1992 will be similar to 1959, the last time that we met. And that was at Kerry Steakhouse at 72nd and Pacific, which, as you know, had been blown away by the tornado here in Omaha. With us tonight is Father Eldon McKamey from St. Louis Parish, where I go to church. And he will do the invitation, and we'll have a memorial service for the 30th anniversary of the three members of our club that were killed in an automobile accident on their way to the Indianapolis Convention. Oh, Father McKamey.
A reading, it's the Psalm 25. In you I trust, let me not be put to shame. Let not my enemies exult over me. No one who waits for you shall be put to shame. Those shall be put to shame who heedlessly break faith. Your ways, O Lord, make known to me. Teach me your paths. Guide me in your truth and teach me, for you are God my Savior, and for you I wait all the day. Remember that your compassion, O Lord, and your kindness are from of old. The sins of my youth and my frailty remember not. In your kindness remember me because of your goodness, O Lord. Good and upright is the Lord. Thus he shows sinners the way. He guides the humble to justice. He teaches the humble his way. All the paths of the Lord are kindness and constancy toward those who keep his covenant and his decrees. For your name's sake, O Lord, you will pardon my guilt, great as it is. All-powerful God, whose mercy is never withheld from those who call upon you in hope, look kindly on your servants, Maurice Nittler, Carol Seth, Hal Wagner, and Pop Edge, members of this group who have departed from this life. We ask that you give them eternal rest, the joy, the peace, the happiness that you promise to each of us. We also, this evening, ask that you grant peace and blessing to this group and to continue to be a support to one another, and through this that they come to a greater love of you. Amen. And at this time, we'll just have a invocation for our blessing. Oh God, we certainly are mindful of the tremendous blessings that you send upon each of us, the gifts that you've given us, the gift of life itself, the gift of friendship, the gift to share with one another, enjoy each other's support. You bless us in so many ways with the weather, the sun, the stars, all these gifts that we take so much for granted, just the air that we breathe. And one that we take so frequently for granted is the food that we partake of, that this is a very special blessing from you, for without it we cannot exist. And so that we just ask, you loving Father, that you bless this food which we're going to partake of this evening, and bless the fellowship which we're going to enjoy. Amen.
Thank you, Father.
That was very nice. The next on the agenda is the meal, and I know you're all hungry. Can I have your attention, please? I have your attention, please? Hello. While we're waiting for the dinner to come, I want you to notice a little mascot in front of us.
Is that his master's
name? Do you know his name?
Nipper.
Nipper. Do you know the story of Nipper?
Yeah.
John Bowker is going to give us a little story and history of Nipper.
Did you know that Nipper has a younger brother?
Son.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Named Chipper. And that for 11 years, the Bowker family had a little dog named Chipper. And we won't go into how Chipper got its name, but if you look at the RCA ads of today, Nipper has a son named Chipper. Nipper came from the Victor Talking Machine Company of Camden, New Jersey, back around the turn of the century. And the one thing that you'll never see, I don't think, unless you find an ad from the turn of the century about Nipper, he's got his head cocked, and somebody down here, I think it was Martin, you said it. His master's voice was the slogan of the Victor Talking Machine Company that RCA overtly just stole when we bought the Victor Talking Machine Company and made RCA Victor. We took along Nipper with us. His master's voice was the accurate, slogan, because he was listening, he thought, to his master's voice. Do you know what Nipper was sitting on at the time, this polished piece of oak? A coffin. And the story that Victor had was that the master had died, and that Nipper was sitting on his coffin, hoping to listen to his master's voice. That's the story of Nipper.
Thank you very much.
After the dinner was over, Ernie Wesolowski introduced some of the speakers who spoke at the dinner, the banquet, on Saturday night.
Can I have your attention, please? How would you like to have a door prize?
Sure.
Get out your tickets for the door prize. This is not an area code, by the way.
Oh, come on, Ernie.
406.
Yeah, check your tickets, Ernie. It's probably yours.
Hey, you take it, all right.
You have 380 or 381.
406.
I got it.
This is awfully suspicious.
This is awfully suspicious.
Another red shirt.
He didn't wear a red sweater.
I'm afraid it was red.
Everything's been won by somebody from the big arts except one. And that went to a board member. Now I think this is a rigged game. Chatterton's going to be the next winner.
I want to make a little announcement for tomorrow morning. At 9 o'clock, we're going to have a technical talk. And John Bowker, the cameraman back there, you all know him, he's going to talk on different slants of the new FCC regulations. So you want to be up there at 9 in the morning. And I know that all of you will be up until 4 tomorrow morning, so you have about 5 hours to shut out. And then after that, we'll have a digital radio update on what it's like at the FCC. Has anybody been at the FCC in Washington? Okay, so you'll be sure to be there tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, and John will tell you all about it.
The bus leaves in 20
minutes. Very no expense, that's it. Okay, I want to pass the microphone over here to Carl Mann. Hold on, is there a problem?
You want to start taping yet?
Yeah, go ahead.
You want to get Carl.
Anytime you're ready to build.
Carl Mann, as you know, is a part of a big old team.
He is.
Big helper to me. And
show us your door prize, proof.
Yeah.
Thanks, I am waiting for my number. Okay, I want to announce we have a 92 convention update page that's available to everyone tonight. If you collect that sort of thing, it's a supplement to your convention booklet. Some last-minute updates, last-minute thank yous on the front, on the back, a list of everybody who's here. Except, too, I knew I'd miss somebody, and it's apologies to Todd Brandenburg and Rick Dow. When you get this, write them on here. We have five people here tonight who were here 33 years ago tonight, and I'd like to recognize Ernie Cooper, who's among them, John Kellerman, and Rick Sampson. Come on, stand up. Along with Ernie.
Come on!
Come on. Yeah. And what happened to Rick? John DeRouse, I don't know, you came in, I think, a month after the convention, I'm not sure.
Yeah, it was something like that. I was around then, I didn't know. They didn't tell me about it. Ernie didn't tell me.
We didn't know, I guess. And we have one award to give away, some recognition. All of us from the Big O team would like to award this. There's about a half dozen of us from the Omaha, Lincoln, and Wahoo area. But one person really put all this together tonight. And he needs recognition, I think, because he's the one that took all the responsibility at the last minute, I might add, and made all the arrangements, gave us guidance and direction, and did his share of legwork on top of that. So to that end, we have a plaque to award and a warm round of applause to Ernest J. Wislowski.
Thank you very much. I had no idea that this would happen, and I'm grateful that all of you have chosen to come to Omaha. And the meal tonight proves what Omaha really is, the beef capital of the world. Okay. It says award, Ernest J. Wislowski, Chief Engineer. How about that? NRC DXCOM 92 in Omaha from the Big O team. Yeah. I'll hang that on my wall. Thank you.
And I'll make sure it's there. Also, a special thank you to Bob McCoy for his work. He brought the program in under budget for us. And thanks to Fred Volby, who made all the copies of the Omaha Market Scope for you. And with that, I'd like to turn the mic over to Fred Volby, who has some comments about the DX audio service.
Not used to talking behind such a short microphone here. Well, anyways, just a few notes here. To some of you who do not know or have not met me at one of the other conventions, I'm Fred Bobe from Lima, Ohio, home of the Abrams M1A1 tank, which gave the Rockies an attitude problem. Also, a licensed amateur radio operator, KB8 BMQ, big, mean, and questionable.
Oh, wow.
So, the DX audio service, just about every month we put together the audio service. We have a feature which is somewhat like the musings from members, with the exception of it's called in on a telephone line. We have a special telephone number where the members can call in and basically put their muse on audio. Just about every issue, someone says, I'd like to thank you for this fine magazine and providing it to us. And a lot of times I get the feeling that I'm the only one that's getting the thank yous. So I'd like to take this opportunity to thank a lot of people behind the scenes which put the audio service together. One is, actually two, the Bowker boys, John and John. The two guys who probably put together most of the travel logs. And it's probably one of the most requested features of the DX audio service. Jerry Starr, who does the AM switch column. Jerry does a fine job. Then there's Bill Hale. Bill's been doing domestic DX Digest on tape for us, and at the present time we're trying to arrange a system where he can call it in the day before publication so that the information is a lot more timely and up-to-date. Phil Wayne, the sandy-haired guy in the back there, who does the Market Scope, which is our air check feature. He coordinates with the different members of the audio service to go through a particular market and profile every radio station so someone who hasn't been to a town can get an idea of exactly how the radio stations sound in that market. It's also Ken Onischuk, National Radio Club member, puts together the sports column for the tape. Laura McCusker, who does the ratings column, lets us know what stations are toilets and which are actually listened to. And then Ken Chatterton. And Ken has been probably very instrumental in helping us push the audio service with the publication side as well as the reprints, as we call them, of the issues, back issues. He helps coordinate with me on the what we call our After Dark series. If we get a lot of material in or something which really is important, but we don't have time to put it in the actual monthly tapes, we put it all together in a 4-cassette library. And Ken has helped put together and figure out exactly what people want and need and handles all the distribution of it so I don't have 1,000 tapes sitting in my living room at home. And finally, I have to thank two people who hardly anyone knows works with me on this, and that is my wife, Debbie, and my daughter, Connie. They help put together every issue. I do most of the duplication. Debbie does the entire database now. And Connie does the label. So if they're upside down or just misaligned, remember, it's a six-year-old putting it together. But keep in mind one thing. It's cheap labor, and I guess it gets the issues out.
Child labor laws.
Yeah.
Still buying
her
T-shirts, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. She gets all the radio station T-shirts. So, you know, be sure to bring some nice T-shirts to the auction because she ends up getting them all. That and the ball caps, too. We've got a couple little changes with the DX Audio Service. One is that we're now handling all the information through our Lima, Ohio address for subscription changes. Anything to do with the audio service is going through Lima, Ohio. Prior to that, it was going through Paul and out to Ron Musco, and some was going to Ken. So we kind of just channel it all to Lima, and then that way we can disseminate all the information out, give the checks to the groups. And gosh, I'm saying this next to the Padre, too, you know. I'm going to burn, I know it. So, anyways, we give the checks to Dick Truex and take care of the database right away. So if anyone has any questions on their audio service subscriptions or has a question concerning the quality of a tape or anything, they can call us directly. And we put all that through our business, or I should say Debbie's business, which is Great Northern Broadcast Company, so that there is a phone number available to be able to get in touch with us, as well as we have the action line and a computer BBS service now for those of you who are into computers and modem access. So looks like things are now starting to roll. As many of you know, there was a management change, and then we had a kind of a bad catastrophe at the beginning of last year where we had a contractor go belly up on us as we were building our new studios. And unfortunately, when we lost all that money and he took off with the materials, we had to go try to figure out a different way of doing things that kind of put us behind. We're now moved into the new facility, which I hope to make some videotape of and show to everyone. Phil has seen pretty much the start of the thing. It's a brand new 10 by 24 foot studio room, complete with automation system, and my wife has thanked me very much for getting it out of her living room. So we should have start doing some really great DX audio service issues in the near future with a lot of super production. But most of all, I'd like to thank the entire DX Audio Service staff for their help, their support, as well as the National Radio Club Board of Directors for their help in pushing the audio service through. It was something which was started completely as a whim in 1985, and I think it's been very successful. Thank you.
Now, comes the interesting part of the night.
I don't know.
Better late than never. Our guest speaker, unfortunately, from KFAB decided that he didn't want to come and talk to us. And so... So we have a great speaker in our hobby of FM DXing. And Dr. Bruce Elving from Minnesota will tell you all about it.
I'm not sure I can tell you all about it. I can tell you about Minnesota, maybe. I can tell you things about living rooms. Our Fred was talking about his wife and getting the stuff out of the living room. Guess what I have in my living room? DX gear, antenna lead-in coming in, wires here and there. I don't see Joe Eisenberg from Lincoln here, but he's got a tolerant wife who doesn't mind a wire coming from the middle of his interior of his car to where his radios are cluttering up his living room and everything. But Carol's a little bit different. I think she's a little more normal, maybe. And I should work. I can talk about her because she's not here. Neither wife is here. I'm talking about. But anyway, we do have that problem. And IDX, I duplicate tapes, as some of the visually handicapped people here know. I send out a tape catalog, and I also have a print catalog. So I don't know if I should begin my speech with plugs, but my print catalog is out of print. Print catalog is out of print. But anyway, when we get back to the Nebraska room, I can have a sign-up sheet there, and if anybody wants to get hold of a print catalog when I have one, then you can write down your name and address, and I'll mail one out to you. Same with the tape catalog. And just tell me you want the tape catalog when I have one, and I'll send that out. And I'll have some stuff to sell, too. FMDX, I was told to talk about. Somebody asked me just before I left for this meeting, when is the best time to DX? And I thought, well, hey, that's a perfect lead-in for my speech, because I see no conflict at all in FMDXing and AMDXing, as you call it, broadcast band DXing. And don't worry about my speech being long. These are not notes. These are just a list of people. So I get a little bit forgetful about who I met. I can just kind of look at the list and say, maybe that's the person who's asking me the question. But anyway, I see no conflict at all. In fact, somebody mentioned they saw an old article that I wrote that's in an updated version by Hank Bennett, Helms Bennett, and who was the third guy in that book, Shortwave Listening. I forget the exact title even now. Shortwave Voices of the World or something like that. Anyway, I've written articles in two of those books. One was edited by Jerry Dexter. This particular one was an article that I wrote in the early 1970s when I was living in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and they never notified me that they were going to reprint and come out with a new edition. So that article, Chapter 10, FMDXing, remains in a newer book. I think it's a 1986 copyright, and it remains in that book even though I wrote it a couple decades earlier, 1.6 decades earlier, you might say. So read that with a little grain of salt, but maybe some of the prose in there still fits. Maybe there's still a little bit of magic in FMDXing that still is true today, even with all these stations on the air, even with Docket 8090. There's still here and there an open channel where you can seize the moment and you can get a little bit of DX, just a little bit. You know, you won't get all the stations in Chicago from here in Omaha or all the stations in New Orleans, but maybe you'll get enough just to make the hobby interesting. And maybe, in reference to this question about when it happens, it doesn't happen necessarily when AM is good, when broadcast band is good. Your winter months are the peak months for broadcast band DXing. Somebody tells me nighttime is good for broadcast band DXing, and I'm probably not as naive as I appear there, because as mentioning to Carl there that I have DX'd at my best, and I kind of retired after hearing WENA and Viam in Puerto Rico on 1560 when they were 250 watts, and I have a QSL from them. So that, I figured that was the ultimate. You know, I'll never get any better than Puerto Rico on a 5-tube Zenith AM-FM radio. And I didn't know there were better radios for broadcast band DXing at that time. So, you know, at my stage of life then, is probably where many of you are. Maybe you're somewhat interested in FM. You have a stereo, you have radios in your cars, and there are better things than the standard radio that you might find in Shopko or Target or Walmart for DXing. You know, like the stereo receivers. They're all probably overpriced, but they all perform relatively similarly. I don't think you need to go to Consumer Reports or the stereo magazines to see which receiver is the best. There are groups, there are people who are supposed experts in that, and I don't. I don't claim to be. I just grab onto what I can get cheaper wholesale, and I put up an antenna and I try to get some DX, so I don't claim to have anything state-of-the-art. But it serves me relatively well, and I think it would serve you relatively well. You can DX FM at its best in the summertime, daytime. And somebody said, what's the best time of the day? Does it vary like AM, like in the middle of the day, it might not have much getting out, and nighttime a lot? To a certain extent, it will. Sunup Tropo is really good. Almost every morning of the year, you can plan on some enhanced reception, some enhanced long-distance reception, say from 8 to 10 in the morning, maybe 6 to 9 in the morning, depends on the time of year when the sun rising occurs. There's a correlation between this and metropolitan smog and haze. So when your lungs tell you not to go outside, maybe that's the best time to be inside and playing around with your radio. And then, of course, there are the other propagations. I'm not going to give you a textbook lecture about what the propagations are, but just as an example, there's Skip, and we know Skip happens in the summertime. It happens in the daytime. It happens mainly 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., so there's some night, early evening Skip. Rare at night after sundown, but it happens. And 1992 saw, I think, one instance of that, at least in my location, QTH, I guess they call those things. They saw one occasion of that. But otherwise, I think it was a fairly punk year for Skip. I only had maybe 6 occurrences of it during the year. Had I been monitoring more often, more faithfully, maybe I would have had more. And I guess that's part of the thing. More important, I think, than the receiver you have is the motivation. How willing are you to give up your time to tune this dial in and find a few reference stations where you might enjoy some DX or note enhanced long-distance reception? And with those stations coming in as an indicator, then chances are other stations from the area in question are coming in and would signal you to the existence of real DX or potential DX. And you can go to it and have a lot of fun. And another plug, I guess, I published a book called The FM Atlas, which started out as a DXing aid. Folks like to buy it to tell if DX was coming in from Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, what the other stations in Punxsutawney were. Unfortunately, my book only shows one station in Punxsutawney, so you'd be out of luck. but maybe there are other stations around the region and nearby. I guess Pittsburgh is a town in Pennsylvania, and that might have some stations. And State College and wherever you hear stations from, you might very well check up in a reference like that. And I used to mark down in yellow colored pencil all the stations I heard. Eventually, it got to be such a, whenever I put on a new FM atlas, I do that in my own copy. But it got to be such a laborious task, marking off, how many stations do you think I've heard? Frank, I bet I've heard as many as you have, or have I?
I'm guessing 2,000, maybe more.
No, about 1,560.
Oh, wow.
What's your total?
19-something.
Okay, so you're ahead of me. At one time, I think I was the world's leading FMDXer. But, you know, for a short while, it teeter-totters and all that. But I guess I'm just kind of glad to have had a little fun with the hobby. And that's all DXing is. It's just fun. It's not competition. I used to think of it as intense competition. Here's Merrill gaining on me. Oh, boy, I better get back to that. or does he count his stations as strictly as I do? And does he count them all from one location, or is he moving around and traveling all over the country and spending his vast wealth and collecting records and collecting FM stations for his log? No, I don't think he is either. So anyway, those are the things that that I've been involved in FM DXing. And like USL, I write for verifications, and I guess I'm not as good at following up as I should, because some of them go back a couple decades where I got letters where no answer has come. And I suppose I should early on write to those stations and ask again, because stations change in their ownerships. I guess years ago that didn't happen so often, but now it does, and people who have the station now, if I wave a letter at them when I heard the station 10 years ago, they'll say, what's this? Nobody's around here who worked there then. So I don't know. And also, I've noticed that stations seem poorer about QSLing and verifying than they used to. I suppose that's because engineering is farmed out. Most stations don't have an engineer. So I try to make my letters interesting to anybody at the station who might receive them, whether it's the secretary or the manager or an announcer or a salesman or somebody like that. And I don't ask anything technical. I know all the technical stuff about the station, all their heights and the effective radiated power. I don't need to know what their transmitter make is or anything like that. But I have a question I've always asked stations since I was a teenager. Since I was younger than Mike down there at the end of the table, I started DXing when I was 13 and writing for verifications when I was 14. I think I was probably an AMDXer since I was about 9. But anyway, I've always asked this question since I was about 15. I guess 1 year went by when I didn't ask it. Is my report of your reception the most distant you've ever heard from, to your knowledge? And I think some stations might resent that question, but I feel it's absolutely essential that I ask that question because it's so interesting, the responses that I get. I'll get letters that will name other DXers. No, I'll say, no, you're not the most distant DXer. We've heard from somebody else. Ernie Cooper was mentioned in one of the letters on Provincetown, Massachusetts. Or they'll mention a person in Ontario or Quebec. Or they'll say, yes, you are the most distant person to every hero station. We've never been heard over 40 miles away to our knowledge. So, you know, all those responses are interesting. And I think they help validate. What's that?
In 2 weeks I've been here, you're the
yeah, right. Yeah, well, I think they help validate your reason for writing a letter to a station and wasting that postage and expecting a reply. And I think the more you ask them, the more inquisitive you are, and maybe the more inclined you might be to get an answer. For a while, I was on a kick. I'd ask them, how profitable are you? I've kind of gotten away from that because I didn't want necessarily only sales managers to write to me. But those are aspects of FMDXing. And then another thing that I've gotten kind of on a kick with is subcarriers. And the last time I was in Omaha, Nebraska, I spoke to a group called the Association of Radio Reading Services. I was an exhibitor there, and they had a luncheon there for vendors. I was a vendor. And I think I got them kind of startled because all the other vendors were representing companies like McMartin and SMC Technologies that had fixed-tune radios. And then I got up on the platform, and I said, greetings, Albanian broadcasters. And they looked at me funny, and I says, yes, you're just like the broadcasters of Albania. You're on a closed-circuit station, and you issue the radios to people, and those radios only get your station. And I says, I am a surreptitious participant. I'm the kind of person that will hover around the dark parking garage selling radios from the trunk of my car like a drug dealer, because maybe it is illegal to do that, but I feel very strongly that as American citizens, we have the right to freely tune in anything that's available on the airwaves. And I still stand by. I didn't get booed and hissed out of there. I think they appreciated what I said. Maybe I stepped on a few toes. I didn't make a lot of sales, but there are a few radios with me. And basically, I think the appeal of my modified radios is not to a reading service, it's not to a store company, but it's to an individual hobbyist who wants to know a little more completely what's out there. Just like the first people who had scanners, the first people who had radar detectors, they wanted to have access to a technology that was hitherto denied them. And now somebody came along and offered scanners and radar detectors. And I think I said this to the Anarch Convention about 1977 in Schaumburg, Illinois. I was just getting interested in that thing then. And I said to them, you can't walk across, this at the mall there in Schaumburg Mall. I said, you can't walk across this shopping center and buy a radio like this. You have to deal with somebody like us. And that's true. It's a technology that's denied people. In a way, it's helped my business because people can't go to the corner Kmart to get a radio like this. So it's great. And I started out selling a few to a few blind people, and it's word has gotten around. And the device, basically. And I think this is one of the things about FM that I like. It's a technology that permits other things to happen on it, just like television does. You have SAP, secondary audio program. You have color. You have, what's this thing for the hearing impaired called? Closed caption, yeah. And all the sets are going to have to have a closed caption pretty soon after, what is it, above 13 inches or something, after a certain date. Just like all radio, all TVs had to have UHF tuning after a certain date in 1964, I believe it was. One time I believed all radios should have FM tuning. Well, now the marketplace has taken care of that. But for a while, I was... In fact, I wrote a term paper, and I was in graduate school saying how I think this was necessary. And I had a lot of disagreement. But that was in the 60s. And they said, well, some of these small radios don't produce good FM tone quality. And I says, well, that's not the reason that such a law might be necessary. It's a matter of circulation. Here you might have at the person's house one large console set, including FM tunability, but all the little radios that are where people live at that time didn't have it. They were just straight AM radios. Well, that's all changed right now. So I think that even though I was kind of early on championing a medium that wasn't cool like the country song, maybe now I'm championing something that isn't cool, but might catch on. I noticed here in Omaha there's a station that what's been around for a long time, KROS, which you toured yesterday. Some of you toured that. They have the reading service there. I think it's the RTB, Radio Talking Book. Did you see the studios of RTB here? Or did you only see the main channel studios?
It's being a separate location.
Oh, okay.
The guy gave us a tour and knew that it was a separate location.
Yeah, I think it used to be in the same building, a vocational high school there. And anyway, oh, there was also the background music service, the old Muzak, which existed on KFOR FM 99.9 in Omaha. And I think I would almost dare say that because of Muzak, KFOR FM was born and reborn. It had existed earlier on a different frequency. I think the information I saw from Ernie indicated that it was once on 97.9. Isn't that right, Ernie?
I believe so.
Yeah. And they were off the air. There was a hiatus. I was teaching in Manhattan, Kansas, my first teaching job in the 59 to 61 era. And I would drive there, and I had an FM radio, Blaupunkt, in my car. And I remember KFOR FM coming in very well right up to the Kansas border. I think their tower was south of Omaha somewhere. And I think at that time they had subcarrier. It has existed since about 54 or 55. It existed earlier than there was FM stereo. And I know in the case of WLOL in Minneapolis, which is not a public station, it was on W99.5, there was an early article in a Hi-Fi magazine saying the reason that station came into being was to provide Muzak with a way of getting to the stores easily, and they could program whatever they wanted on the main channel to the public. So the FM station was almost a bonus to the Muzak. And KFOR FM came into existence about that time, so I almost believe that it was the Muzak that propelled the rain station into being. Well, whatever the history, it's still on. It's been on probably ever since that station's existed. And it's on now on an additional channel. There's a 67 setting. This is measured from the center of the FM station carrier. I don't want to get too technical here. But at 67 is where most of these stations have resided, with the background music and the reading to the blind. There's now a newer channel called 92 kilohertz, a little bit more removed from the center of the channel, close to the very edge of that channel. And KGOR right now is broadcasting both the channels, one at 67 with easy listening music and one at 92 with light rock. So maybe a McDonald's restaurant would have the light rock service, and maybe the banks would have the easy listening. And in either case, the proper receiver would be set to the proper frequency, and the store would get it. Now, the problem with the people at home, theoretically, you should not be listening to it because it's copyrighted. It's proprietary music, engineered and processed and produced by Muzak. And I see no problem with that. Some Muzak operators are very squeamish, others are very open. And the ones I've encountered personally have been very open about it. Maybe it's the way in which I've approached them. I've told them that we're only interested in listening in our own private homes, not in any office or business where the public would be frequenting, or in our vehicles. And there's been no problem that way. Some of the reading services, on the other hand, have been exceedingly squeamish. I don't think in Nebraska I've had that encountered that problem. I know some of the people at KIOS, Jim Minier, the director there, I know him. Some of them are, I think, a little bit concerned, and I don't really wish to divulge too much what's going on here because of the old, Section 605, it's now got a new number, I guess. And there's another bastardized law that I won't even mention because I don't believe in it. But I think you know about it because if you've been reading the Popular Communications or Monitoring Times write-ups, you'll know about that law. But anyway, it's kind of inhibited some of the businesses like mine to a certain extent. But some of the reading services do, of course, get into reading material that some people might call pornographic. And I think this is the reason they would like to have secrecy and not having the radios get out to other people. They say things like, oh, it's because we read recent copyrighted works, and if the general public got hold of it, then our copyright protection would be all ended. But I think that's kind of a whitewash job, because it says in the law that as long as the material is intended primarily for the blind, they don't have to worry about approaching the copyright holders every time they read a recent novel, for instance. So they're covered. And a lot of people would be tuning in anyway. Like if a blind person has sighted members of the family, they would have access. So I think the whole idea of keeping it exclusively for the blind is kind of a miss. And also it denies valuable service to people who might need it. There's a waiting list for receivers. Some people can afford to buy one or would like to buy one. One that's maybe tunable, that does something iconoclastic, like getting a station that's not intended for them. And just think, if you were in a situation where Big Brother told you what you assign what station you should be listening to. And that's the same way it is with some of these agencies. And maybe it's the same way with McDonald's, if you're working there and you're the manager or the owner even, and you have to listen only to what's assigned to you to listen to. But these are some of the issues I find interesting in FM radio. Besides just DXing it, the fact that you can open up a radio set, and I'm no technical expert. My background is in production, something like what Fred does, speech communication and that. So I have very weak technical knowledge of the industry, a little bit about engineering, a little bit knowing how propagation works and that. But I think if I could do it, almost any of you could do it, and that is to open up a radio receiver and with a very minimal amount of equipment, probe in there and find out that there are other programs that your normal loudspeaker is not producing. These programs include things like reading to the blind, background music, network relay, data to computers, which is a whole different area of exploration. But by getting into the radio set and analyzing the circuitry, you can do interesting things. It's like DXing every different radio design and finding out where this special program is lurking and where these signals, this music, is running around in the circuitry, and then clamp a device into that circuit, just like a physician going into a person and inserting a pacemaker. You go into this radio and insert a device about this size with four wires coming from it, a switch, and bingo, you got a new band on your radio called SCS, as I call it, Subcarrier Communication Services, or Subcarrier. And you can do that. Now TVs have the SAP program, and you can, if you're not too unknowledgeable, you can probably modify a television set to get that, but there are higher voltages roaming around in a TV set, so you have to be careful. The only TV sets I've modified are those that are AC-DC, like small black and white AC, DC, AM-FM radios with TV. And then you can put both the SAP and the FM subcarriers in them. They have an AM-FM radio included. So those are some of the interesting aspects of broadcasting. And if I had my catalog here, I could read that poem, My Musical Friend, but maybe you can see that there. Hidden among the transistors of my radio set is a program of music called Muzak, ready to elevate my soul to the highest levels and all this hogwash. But I know whatever you might think of Muzak, it's there. It can be plucked, freely plucked, I would say, regardless of what they might tell you. And another thing, I was just driving over here. I flipped on my subcarrier on the car radio, and I noticed on KGBI 100.7, a Christian station, they normally have, they used to have farm market data on it. I think it was Market Quarters out of Market Quarters out of Minneapolis or a place out of Kansas City. Now they have a group called the Children Sunshine, S-O-N-S-H-I-N-E Network. I suppose it's for preteens, and it's got music. What? Somebody's saying what it is. As far as I know, it's got music and stories and stuff like that. But it's entirely separate from the main channel, what the main channel is doing. And yet I think it's complementary to what it's doing. And I think if this were a trend, it would signal something very interesting in broadcasting. So you have a rock station with, mainstream rock for the public. But maybe there's a dedicated group of hardcore fans who want to hear progressive or something. then maybe a subcarrier could be devoted to those people, or two subcarriers on neighboring stations so that you could hear them in stereo with two radios. You know, there are all kinds of different configurations. You could modify a boombox with one stereo subcarrier in one channel and one off the other speaker.